Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Hello, and thanks for downloading Swiss Info's podcast for July the 25th. I'm Dale Bechtel. This week,
the creation, for instance, of a new canton was something extremely important.
We look back at a man who was a leading figure on the Swiss political stage and hear about one of his successes. But first, a diplomatic crisis erupted on July 23rd between Switzerland and Libya. A week after Muammar Gaddafi's son Hannibal was arrested in Geneva on charges of beating two members of his staff, the Libyan government took a series of retaliatory measures against Switzerland. Most severe was the detainment of two Swiss nationals working in Libya. Foreign Ministry spokesman Jean-Philippe Jeanneret.
They are in a collective cell with about 20 other people. Promiscuity is rampant and the level of hygiene is abysmal. The cell is extremely hot and they have no contact with the outside world, not even with representatives of the Swiss consulate, although we have requested this. So they have no idea what could happen to them next. The situation is unacceptable and very alarming.
As part of the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth retaliatory measures threatened by Hannibal, Gaddafi's wife, just after the couple were released on bail and left the country, is the closure of offices of Swiss companies present in Libya and a threat to stop Libyan oil shipments to Switzerland. Currently, Libyan imports account for about 20% of Switzerland's oil consumption. But Rolf Hartl, managing director of the Swiss Oil Association, told Swiss Info he was not sure how seriously Switzerland should take the threat.
I'm skeptic about the truthfulness of this announcement because it comes from the shipping organization and not from the national oil organization. And therefore, the chances that this announcement is a new chapter in this saber-rattling made by the Libyans is, in my opinion, at least 50%.
Hartl and the Swiss authorities said Switzerland had oil stocks to last the next few months and could adjust its supply by drawing from other European refineries. Hartl added that Libya was shooting itself in the foot.
They do not only supply us with crude, they are also very heavily engaged in the Swiss oil market. They own the Colombier refinery. They also own a retail chain of about 320 outlets. They have invested in the last years several hundreds of millions of Swiss francs into the upgrading of the Colombier refinery. And it is clear that the first victim of such an oil embargo would be, ironically, the Tamoil company, which is owned 100% by the Libyans.
On July 23rd, a former cabinet minister, Kurt Fergler, died at the age of 84 in St. Gallen, the city of his birth. Fergler, considered one of the most brilliant political figures in post-war Swiss history, spent 15 years in the government, first as justice minister, and then as head of the economics ministry. Known as a reformer, the center-right Christian Democrat brought about changes to adoption laws and legislation concerning children and marriage. He also paved the way for the inclusion of a constitutional article enshrining equal rights for men and women. In an interview with Swiss Radio International, Swiss Info's predecessor, shortly after he stepped down in 1986, Fergler spoke about one of his successes, overseeing the establishment of a new canton, that of Jura in western Switzerland.
The creation, for instance, of a new canton was something extremely important. Since 1848, Switzerland never had changed. We never had created a canton. And now, these problems of autonomy, how difficult they are in a worldwide sense. Here, Bern prepared an additive, special article in the Constitution, giving a chance to autonomists to say, what do you want? Do you want to stay? Do you want to create a new canton? And the Swiss Parliament and the Swiss Confederation accepted it too. And now it's functioning well. That's an example of evolution. And that I could participate, that I could perhaps in this period as head of justice, do my best, is one of these examples you ask for.
The cabinet member currently in the spotlight is Defense Minister Samuel Schmidt. On July 21st, Schmidt suspended the head of the armed forces, Roland Neff, who had been accused of sexual harassment of a former girlfriend.
I've demanded that he credibly, and without leaving room for any interpretation, rebuts all of the speculation, rumors, and accusations in front of me, the cabinet, parliamentary commissions, and the public. This will put an end to the ongoing debate, and therefore I've offered to suspend him until that time.
But Neff, probably seeing the writing on the wall, saved more public embarrassment by offering to resign only 4 days later. His decision is unlikely to relieve much of the pressure that has been placed on Schmidt. There are calls from both the left and right for him to step down. Schmidt is in the firing line for not informing the other cabinet ministers of a criminal investigation pending against Neff when he was one of four candidates in the running for the post of army chief last year. It wasn't only a defense minister and army chief who made the headlines this past week. A fighting swan was also in the news. It all began in mid-June. An aggressive swan began attacking people swimming in Lake Lucerne near the village of Horv. The foul-tempered bird developed such a reputation that the authorities put up a sign warning bathers to swim at their own risk. And most people obeyed, staying clear of the waters. The swan, having lost meaty targets to sink its beak into, flew off to the shores of a neighboring town and began its attacks anew. The swan was eventually captured and locked away after a swimmer was nearly drowned during a confrontation. It was caged but not tamed, so the authorities tried in vain to find it a new home where it would not come into contact with humans. The swan was eventually put down, and one would think that would have been the end of a very tragic story. But the local papers began to ask, did they get the right one? Only days after the execution, the manager of the public swimming area in Horv, where the attacks began, reported that the fighting swan had struck again. Now it's time for Out and About, the part of our podcast where Swiss Info journalists report from the far corners of the country. Claire O'Dea went fishing for a typical summer story and fell hook, line, and sinker for the resort of Melksee Fruit in central Switzerland. That's where she met a former English gamekeeper who's trying to recruit more converts to the elegant pastime of fly fishing.
Arriving by cable car at this popular departure point for hikers, you are likely to spot eager anglers setting off for a day's fishing at one of the nearby lakes. There are the solitary men in angling waistcoats for whom fishing is close to a religion, but also families on a day out who are trying the sport for fun. Drawn by the prospect of spending a sunny afternoon at an alpine lake 2,000 metres above sea level, I decided to try my hand at fly fishing. Despite not knowing one end of a rod from another, it only took a matter of minutes for guide and instructor John Tuft to show me the basic technique for casting the fly line. The origins of fly fishing stretch back into antiquity when anglers first used fur, feather and thread to imitate fish prey. Today, flies are made with a wide variety of natural and synthetic materials.
And we just straighten it out, and then we'll attach the fly that we decide we're going to put on to try to start with. And if that fly doesn't work, we'll change it as many times as we need to during the day. Sometimes you'll fish with one, if a fly is working well, you'll leave the same fly on for most of the day. If it doesn't work, give it 15 minutes or so, change the fly, change a different technique, and just keep trying different techniques to see where the fish are feeding.
Apart from the moment of excitement when you catch a fish, most of the fishing time is spent in silence and relative stillness, until the angler almost blends in with the scenery. Fishing doesn't have to be expensive, according to Tuft.
Fishing's for everybody. Kids love it. I mean, get kids out of the front of a computer and get them out. I mean, you've seen how wonderful this countryside is here. What a better place could you bring your kids? It's not an expensive sport. Once you've had a lesson, then you can quite happily go out and start, and you can get cheap equipment, which is good enough quality equipment for probably less than 200 francs. And then all you have to do is buy a few leaders, buy some flies, and come somewhere like this and buy your day ticket and spend the day up here.
Most Swiss lakes and rivers are stocked with different types of trout and enforce a policy of catch and keep up to a maximum number. This is so that anglers won't damage too many fish by unlimited catching and releasing.
With different types of fish, you get the rainbow trout, Canadian lake trout, even the sibling, as they call them, which is a type of char, which is in English, but Americans call them brook trout. But they get them for not just the streams, they get them for the lakes as well. And they can grow to a fair size in some of them.
But as I was to learn, one thing that's never guaranteed on a day's fishing is fish.
But the trick is to find out what they're feeding on today. And at the moment, we haven't found that out.
We enjoyed the scenery and the tranquility, but despite our best efforts, we didn't manage to catch anything for supper that day.
Thanks, Claire, for being honest and not telling us about the one that got away. Weather permitting, you can fish in Malxay Fruit until the end of October. That's all for this podcast. You can find out more on fly fishing and other reports you've just heard on swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening. I'm Dale Bechtel.